Welcome to Tips from the Server Room. This podcast is designed for all you systems admins, network specialists, or the guys and gals out there in the office who handles it all. Sit back, relax, grab a beverage, and enjoy Tips from the Server Room. Yes, welcome back, everybody, once again to Tips from the Server Room. This is episode number 47, recorded May 20th, 2014. I'm your host, Jack, and I'm here to guide you through this magical realm of networking, servers, and everything connected together. This show is a proud member of the Tech Podcast. If it's tech, it is here. Check it out at techpodcast.com. Folks, please check out my website if you should have time to do so. And you can simply check out that website by going to tipsfromtheserverroom.com. That's tipsfromtheserverroom.com. You can get information, you can comment on these shows, and I wish that you would do so. Also, you can leave me a voice message at my new voice number. I guess it's not really new. We've had it for a while now. But it's 724-701-0550. If you have any questions or ideas for future shows, please email me, and you can send those to jackstechcorner@gmail.com, and you can follow me on Twitter, and that's @technoman. Tonight I am recording this show on the road. I wanted to let you know that. So the audio may be nowhere near the quality that we're used to receiving from, naturally, from the home gear. Tonight I am using a Samsung Go microphone. It's just a wee little microphone. It's a little condenser microphone. It's pretty cool, though. It's USB. It connects right to the top of my laptop, and it's just a really cool little microphone. And, if you're interested, tonight's beer, again, is George Killian's Red. George Killian's Irish Red. This beer is made by the Coors Light Brewing Company, or from the Coors Brewing Company, I guess, in Colorado. So if you're ever out looking for a good tasty beer, I do suggest George Killian's. Not that they sponsor the show or anything, and that would be really great to have Coors sponsoring the shows. We're going to start off this evening show here with an email response from one of our past shows. It says, "Hi Jack, I thought I would email you after your last show, number 46, regarding network monitoring software. I helped to manage 4,000 nodes citywide over a massive network. We run HP and Cisco equipment. For our wireless part of our network, we had HP access points. We currently use HP IMC, or its Intelligent Management Center. It's a great tool. For our Cisco equipment, we are using RTM, Cisco Real-Time Monitoring Tool. I thought I would throw them in there so I could maybe help you in some way. I run my own network at home, server 2012 R2, running 3 virtual machines, 1 Windows 7 client, VM for testing, and 3 servers, one of which is a WDS server. And bless you on that, because it's a very, very hard service to set up, hard to understand. The other is a web server running 2008 R2. I also have a few Windows 8.1 desktops and a few laptops using 1 or 2 different wireless networks. I have, as you mentioned in your podcast, have a guest network. It's not protected by my firewall. All other machines and servers are protected. I am using a Zywall, it's Zywall, USG device, it might be USB device, to protect my network, and I run Wireshark for my network monitoring. Lastly, I do have dedicated NICs in my server for my virtual machines, and I want to clarify that in just a minute. I would like to say you're doing a great job on your podcast, and I'd like you to do more like show number 46. That would be great. Thanks. And this is Paul in the UK. And Paul's website, if you want to check Paul out, I'm going to give you a plug there, Paul, is www.techieguy, N-I. So it's TECHYGUYNI.com. Now, I did want to make a comment on the multiple NICs for virtual machines, because I think you remember in the last show we talked a little bit about using different NICs in your, or somebody wrote in about using different NICs for different subnets and IPs, and I said that is not really the best idea. Now, all of our servers that we are running VMs on, we do have multiple network cards in it. And if you build yourself a server, the server that we're currently using is a 1U server, so it's in a 1U case, and it houses, I believe that server has 6 network cards in it. Now, what that's nice for, even though, now you can run virtual switching on your VM boxes, and it's a very straightforward process, and I'm sure you can do it on Windows virtual machines also. But I tend to like to separate my virtual servers and have them on their own NIC. That way, if anything should go wrong, it's not everything going wrong or going across that one NIC. It's going across, you know, 5 or 6 different network cards in that server. And I think that's key to have some kind of failover. You don't want everything running over one network card, because you can't have problems. So it was good that Paul sent that in. I do really appreciate that. Now, in tonight's show, I thought we would talk a little bit about big data. We never, ever talk about data on these shows. And I wanted to talk a little bit about big data and controlling it. Now, you know, we're not going to get too nitty-gritty here. I had somebody email me once and said, Jack, you know, your podcast is great, but sometimes it gets too technical. That's it's kind of what this podcast was designed to do. It was designed to be technical in nature, to help everybody out there. But I wanted to keep it enough in layman's terms where we can all kind of use the podcast to gather enough information to share with each other and be able to get our missions done, our data warehouses, our networks, and whatever, to get that operation successful. And I think that's the key to this podcast. But today we want to talk about databases. Now, if you don't have a database, don't run off. Don't say, well, Jack, that doesn't pertain to me, I'm out of here. Because you just never know when you can get that magical job, and you have that job, and next thing you know, you are the one taking care of the SQL database, and you might be asked to move it, and you're saying, wow, I wish I would listen to that podcast. Well, that's what we're going to talk about tonight, folks, in this episode. Now, there's really 2 main data engines that I use, 3 that I really know of, 2 that I really use. The first being Microsoft SQL, and the second being Microsoft SQL or SQL Express. I kind of put them into both into the same realm, and we're going to talk about a couple differences between those two that I know of. And then there's a program out there that is free and open source called MySQL, MySQL. We also use that on a couple of our servers for a couple different applications. Now, a really good application is written where it doesn't rely on any one standard SQL engine. And what I'm saying there is the one company that came in said, look, Jack, you can either use the Microsoft SQL if you own it. If you don't, we can set up MySQL on one of your servers, and we can simply go from there. We can just simply use that server. And because the routine and the languages are almost the same, and I know I'm getting a lot of email responses, at least I hope so anyway from this one, but they are just about the same, where you can actually populate the tables and everything using almost the same SQL structures. So it shouldn't matter what your client is using when you're taking a database engine out there to them. Now, there is one other one that I know of, and I've been to a lot of conferences with these folks, and I think they're really great people, but I classify them more into big data. I mean, teraflops of data, and that is Oracle. I don't consider Oracle to be one of the, you know, the people that you're going to go to run a database with, you know, 5 users on it, or to run a database for a web server. If I'm running a web server, I am running MySQL on my web server with PHP because I love it. It works great. But, Oracle is more, like I said, if you have data flops, teraflops of data, and you have massive servers, and you may want to use Oracle because I think it scales better in that market. Alright, so with any data engine, you're going to have, and we're not talking about Microsoft Access here, folks. This is a little bit more than Access. But let me go back first. So Microsoft SQL or SQL Express, what are the main differences? The biggest difference that I found that a lot of people don't realize is when you load that SQL Express up on your server, what you're actually doing is you're limiting yourself to 2 gigabytes of data. The engine's going to kind of shut down at 2 gigabytes of data, and then you have to purge, and you have to figure out how to actually maintain that data. And that is a problem. I mean, that's happened to us once before. And so then we since went to Microsoft SQL that has no limitations that way. Microsoft Access databases have the same kind of restriction. 2 gigabyte data limit. So if you get tons of data in there, and I've seen some Microsoft SQL databases designed to house picture, the whole graphic file in it, that is going to eat up your 2 gig of data pretty quickly. So the first thing we're going to talk about here in this show with that understood is with any data engine, you need to get familiar with the tools and how to manage and control your data. Even if you're not a database administrator, when I started the job at the school, I was familiar because I've written a bunch of programs that I've housed with MySQL database backends, and we worked with SQL Express quite a few times, but I never really had to manage them. I never had to worry about how they were running or worry about their well-being. I just had to manage the data, make sure it was backed up, and everything just worked because we had vendors for all that. But in my role now, I do worry about the management of those databases. I do have to know how those databases are running. I have to be familiar with the progress of the database. And I also have to be really familiar with the backend server to make sure that server is staying afloat and make sure we're not crushing it through the daytime. So that is stuff that's very important to me now. We have, as far as our school's concerned, we have a gradebook system. Now that gradebook system is not only used by our teachers and our staff for putting grades in, for putting lesson plans and stuff in. It is also being accessed 24 hours a day, 7 days a week by the parents and by the students at home, looking at their own grades, looking at their work assignments. That database has to be on top of the world because normally, folks, I try not to work on the weekends. I try to take Saturday and Sunday and try to relax a little bit and do what I want to do. So those databases have to keep chirping away. And, you know, we'll talk one day about, we talked last week a little bit about monitoring your network. And we'll talk a little bit maybe someday about how to get those servers to text you when they go down or if something happens on your network. But that's another story. Main thing tonight is you have to know how to use these tools. Now, the first thing we're going to talk about is you have to be able to back up a running data engine. Now, if you do that, I set mine up to back up in the evening, and I'm talking late in the evening. Usually it happens at about 2 a.m., between 2 and 3 a.m. What I did was I wrote a small script, and I put that in as an automated task on my server. So every night at 2 a.m., that script will fire. The first command is to stop. It does a net stop, and it stops the SQL engine. It makes a copy. It does a copy. It copies all of the databases that's in the folder, in the MySQL or SQL folder, and it copies all of those over to a backup SQL folder. Once they go there, once the copying is done, the data engine is told to restart. That way it comes back online. The main reason is, and if you ever tried to do this, you should probably get an error message. You can't back up a live database because if the files are open and it's getting read and written to, you can't back those up. They'll be locked and it's not going to allow you to copy that file. So this way, this allows us to copy the file over and then we back up the backup folder is how we do it. So we have a copy of those actual files itself. Now, with that said, if you have some of the tools, and the tools out there for Microsoft SQL are not as easy to understand as MySQL. The MySQL tool is called the MySQL Workbench, and Microsoft also has a tool of their own to work with their data sets and their data engines. But I do like working with the MySQL Workbench more than the other data engines. It's just really easy to follow. Now, what you should do at least once a week, or if nothing else, you can push that maybe to once a month, depending on how much data is written to your data sets. You can go into those software programs and you can actually do a backup. When you do that backup, it's going to write it as a CSV file. Take that text document, then that file, and put it somewhere. Now, when you back these things up, I suggest don't back up just the data. Back up the tables and the whole structure of the database. Because, folks, it's happened to me in the past, if something should happen to your data set or your data engine, or that server should happen to die, you're going to have to take that data and move it. You're not going to be able to recreate all those tables, trust me. So what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to load the data engine up onto another server, and then you go and you would repopulate that with that CSV file, and it will build all those tables and everything back for you, re-put your data back in, and then you'll be good to go. So that is one way to do that. Now, when moving in that same note, in that same thought process, when moving data from one server to another server, you need to first disconnect your data sets from your engine. Now, I used to believe that this was a simple process. The way I used to believe this worked, before I started really learning data sets, is I used to think that you would just simply stop the data engine, like I told you before, copy the data files out, put them in a folder, and move and start another data engine somewhere else and put them in a folder and they'll pick them up. That is not the way they work. The data set gets connected also to the server name. So what you have to do is you go into the software and you do a disconnect data set. You basically dismount the data from one engine. Once it's dismounted, then you can take that data set, you move it, and then you remount it or re-establish its connection to a new engine on another server. That way, that process will actually be a more transparent move from one server to the other, and it makes it a lot cleaner and a lot easier to do so. Now, as I told you before you do this, back up your data sets. Back up your data set and back up your engine. Back up all those data to a CSV file, and then you can copy and move those. Now, whenever you set up a new database, the one thing I want to touch base with you here is you have to set up a SA account or a systems administrator account. Now, I would suggest when you're doing this, it's going to say, do you want to use a system administrator with an administrative log on? So what that'll do is whoever your administrator is, which is you, I'm sure, on your Active Directory server, you will become the SA account for that, and your password will be the SA's password, and it will just work a lot easier. Set it up that way. One time I did set mine up, I clicked on mixed mode, and I used the SA account, or the server administrator account, and I put a password in. Now, I must have typed the wrong letter or something on the password. Something happened. I don't even know exactly what it was, but something did happen to it, and what I did was, at that point, I couldn't get back into the account. And now I'm going to read you a statement about why that is and how that happens. I can tell you, if you do that, if you create your own SA account, make sure, because you can't reset this password, you have to uninstall the server engine and reinstall it. That's the only way I've found to do this. So you would just simply write that password down or make sure you're very, very careful. Now, here's some information on SQL Server 2000. The Systems Administrator SA is a special logon provided for backward compatibility. By default, it is assigned to the sysadmin fixed server role and cannot be changed. See, it says it cannot be changed. Although SA is a built-in administrative login, do not use it routinely. Instead, make systems administrators members of the system admin fixed server role and have them log on using their own logins. Use SA only when there is no other way to log in to the instance of the Microsoft SQL Server. For example, when other system administrators are unavailable or have forgotten their password. I think that's kind of comical because we shouldn't forget our passwords. During installation, the SQL Server setup prompts you to set an SA login password if you request mixed mode authentication, which is basically authenticating against your Active Directory database and authenticating against a text file. Basically, an SA mode is not the best way to do so. But if you want to do this, you should assign a password immediately to prevent unauthorized access to an instance of SQL Server using the SA login. I have a few more pieces here to read about this I'm going to read for you, but let me just follow this up with that thought, because I know a few years back we had a problem with SQL data security or SQL security in general, people hacking people's SQL databases. We had a vendor call us up and they asked me, they came straight out and said, Jack, do you have passwords on all of your data engines? And at that time, I did not, because it's a lot easier to set up an SA or a systems administrator account on your database with no password. It's just easier to get the software to talk to it. It's easier to make things work the way you think they should work. They immediately had me go in, and we was able to re-authenticate and put a password on the systems administrator account, the SA account. And the reason was because you don't want anybody to hack into your data. This is just huge, especially if you're running a web server and that web server somehow the software is tied into your database, your SQL database. Do not leave that SA out there unprotected. By contrast, if you select Windows authentication during installation, assign a password to the SA login after installation to ensure that the SA login has a password in case you later change the mode to mixed mode authentication. I really don't know, unless your vendor has some kind of reason for doing so. I don't know any reason why you would want to use mixed mode authentication on your SQL databases. I would suggest sticking with the Active Directory, the server-based role, and not doing mixed mode. It just seems to make a lot more sense. So folks, I do want to hear more and more about what you're doing out there with your SQL databases. And they call it SQL, it's SQL. For short, we've always called it SQL databases. And I want to know what you're using out there, how you're protecting those, and maybe how you'd recommend others to protect their databases. I'm sure a lot of you out there are much, much smarter than I am on this SQL stuff. Like I said, I've been doing it now for the better part of probably give or take 10 years, I guess. I've been really pretty heavy in the database realm and getting the database figured out and set up. I've actually written a couple data structures. We've done queries across the SQL databases. I've written numerous reports pulling the data out of the SQL databases. But if you have any ideas of installing the software and protecting the SA accounts, we would surely would like to hear from that. I'm sure everybody out there would like to hear more about your input on that actual topic. We would definitely get some out of that by sharing this and kind of paying this forward. That's what this podcast is each week anyway. We pay it forward, and that's what I want you to be able to do, is pay it forward also. So folks, this is going to be a little bit shortened podcast tonight. I'm sorry about that. If you're still on your way to work, hopefully you have another one lined up in the queue that you can start playing right now and pick it up after I'm finished here. But being on the road, I've had a really long day today. I've been in classes for the past 3 days, and I've been in classes for data. We're talking about school and state reporting data is what I've been working with. And we've been learning about big data. I mean, just huge, massive amounts of data, how we can control it, how we can make it better. I will tell you, if you do any database work, the biggest thing the database, and you'll hear anybody in the technology world tell you, and this is an old saying, garbage in equals garbage out. No matter what people put in the database, and your CEO tells you, pull a report of all the structured cells for the month, and you come back, the cells are zero. That's because somebody was putting garbage into your database, and you got nothing out of it. So You know, that's key. Key is the database, and key is putting correct information in. That's what we've been learning for the past 3 days now, is the whole thing of, if people don't put the data in correctly, and we're asked to pull the data out of it to do something to query a database, well, the database is just not going to look right, because the data is going to be wrong or corrupted, or something will be happening with it because it wasn't entered properly. So be very careful with that. If you have any ideas for future shows, I would like to hear from you. Call that voicemail line. Just say, hey, Jack, this is what I'm thinking about. You know, maybe you can talk about it. I would love to do that for you. I'll give you that voicemail line again, just in case you want to drop me a voice message. And that is 724-701-0550. Just call that number. Nobody's going to answer it. Don't be scared, like, oh, no, he might answer, and then you'll have to talk to me. No, I'm not going to answer it. It's strictly voicemail. It'll go there, you leave your message, and we'll play it on the show. So, you know, make it as intelligible as possible and as clear. Talk slowly and clearly. If it does cut you off, just call back and leave the rest of your message. Very simple to do. Or drop it an email. A lot of people have been sending emails in now, and I'm very happy they've been doing so. So it's wonderful to have emails. But folks, I'm glad I could talk to you on the road there. I can tell you at home. I talked to my wife, and my new microphone is at home now, so I'll be talking more about that probably on the next show. You'll hear that new mic in action, and we're going to be giving the Shure SM7B a little rest, my broadcast studio mic. We'll give it a rest, and we're going to be firing up an RE320. So if you don't know what that is, just do a Google search for RE320, and you'll see the new microphone that I will be using. So it's another broadcast quality microphone. Somebody said, Jack, why are you changing? You know, I just like to play with microphones. I really enjoy them. It's kind of a hobby. So this is kind of cool working with this Samsung Go mic. Check it out. It might be something you want to pick up. They're only about $40. And, you know, even if you don't do podcasting, they're great for Skyping. They're great for doing FaceTime with a loved one if you're on the road and you want to use your computer and talk FaceTime. Or even Google Hangouts. I mean, it's just a wonderful little microphone. Has a headphone input or an output jack. You can plug headphones in and put those on if you want to do that. You can kind of monitor yourself talking. I don't find it to be as good, honestly, as what comes out of my mixer at home, but you can do it. So, I mean, it's really a nice little microphone. For $40, you probably can't beat the little condenser mic. And you're hearing the audio now, so hopefully the audio sounds good. I'm watching the waveforms as I'm recording this, and it looks pretty good, so I think it'll be fine. All right, so other than that, folks, I want to say, first of all, I want to thank everybody out there for signing up for my server courses. I appreciate it. I've been getting a huge response off of that, and I have to kind of pay it forward, because I believe it kind of lends itself to the Tech Podcast and the Tech Podcast Network. Since I've been kind of inducted into their shows there, we see a pickup of those server courses, because a lot of the tech people, a lot of you tech guys, are coming to listen to this podcast and coming from techpodcast.com. So I appreciate that, and I like to pay it forward to those guys. I really do appreciate you coming over and signing up for the courses. If you don't have high-speed internet, and you may not, if you don't, you can order those server videos on DVD. Just go to jackstechcorner.com and click on the link, and you'll see the little pull-down menu. Click on the DVD, the one you want to purchase. You pay for it, and I ship it out the very next day. It's usually in the mail to you. So, folks, and if you don't know anything about the courses, you're saying, what is he talking about? If you want to learn Windows Server 2008 R2, Windows Server 2012, or VMware ESXi 5.5 Server, from A to Z, from install to administration, please check out my online courses. You get to those at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Click on the pull-down link at the top where it says online classes. Click on that, and you'll go right in, and you can sign up for one of the courses. These courses are self-paced, so take your time. There's no rush to get through these courses. You watch a short little video, take a 2 or 3 question quiz, and you're good to go. Once you complete the course, I will mail your certificate. Once again, you can sign up for those at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Spell it out, tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Folks, I hope you have a great work week. If you should have any questions through the week, send those in, because I like putting those in the show also. Don't forget, if you haven't watched them, check out my YouTube videos at 42 Technoman. That's number 4, number 2, Technoman. And I have some great videos over there on DHCP, DNS, server installs, and a few more. So check those out today. I will talk to everybody next Tuesday night. Take care. Have a great work week, and we'll see you then. Bye for now.
You just listened to Tips from the Server Room with your host, Jack. If you have any questions, please drop me a comment at tipsfromtheserverroom.com. Thanks again for tuning in and downloading the shows. Now sit back, relax, and listen to the remainder of the music. We'll see you next week on Tips from the Server Room. So long.